Hey everybody, welcome to Treetop Talks. This is Andy Sherwood over here.
And this is Jay Halasek.
And we're going to talk to you guys this week about the importance of forests, and our species of this episode is going to be sugar maple.
Yeah, it's a great tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's jump right in.
Okay.
The importance of forests.
Yeah, so one of the main things I think is how trees kind of drive the hydrologic cycle and get the water out of the ground into the atmosphere, which gets the whole cycle moving.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the key elements of that process.
Yeah.
So you have evaporation and transpiration. These are some terms you're going to hear us use throughout this podcast. So I'll give you a quick definition of what they mean, and then we'll really talk about them. So evaporation is the process by which water changes from a liquid to a vapor. It depends on temperature of the air and then humidity and wind speed, things that'll make evaporation happen either quicker or slower. And then transpiration is the process by where water is taken from the soil up through the roots and then evaporates out of the pores in leaves. So let's explain maybe why that's really important to the hydrologic cycle a little bit better.
Okay, yeah. So if we think about how much land area that large forests take up, they have so many trees in them that the amount of water that's in the soil, all of that moves through the trees and into the atmosphere. And so if you think about that whole land area and how much water would be in there, think of it as if it was a lake. There's almost that much water in there. Obviously, a lot of that volume is filled up with roots in the soil and all of that, but there's a lot of water in there as well. So all that water goes up through the tree and into the atmosphere. Once it's in the atmosphere, then it starts raining
right.
And all these other things. There's actually been studies that show that areas with forests have more rainfall than areas without forests because they drive that system, and there's a lot of countries in the world that are having desertification issues where they have deforestation.
Right.
So the area turns to desert after the forest is lost.
And so really the forests that do remain, the large pockets of them, are very important for that reason because they drive the weather patterns for most of the rest of the world in some way, shape, or form. Because they're constantly putting all this moisture back into the atmosphere. That's what drives, you know, the seasonal cycles and rain patterns mostly and all that other stuff. So it's really, like you said, you have desertification happening in places where you're seeing deforestation, which, you know, why don't we just kind of segue into a little bit about that and talk about why it's important to understand why this is now becoming an issue. So deforestation is, it's not necessarily just clear-cutting everything down anymore. It used to mean that in the 1800s and 1900s when North America was settled, they clear-cut most of the trees that were here. Now they do it in patches, and while it's different, it's still very negatively impacting things.
What it does is it directly impacts what trees grow in the forest, and when the trees in the forest is really only determined by what makes the most money at the lumber yard, that negatively impacts the forest's biodiversity and the forest's entire ability to thrive and be healthy and support itself into the future. And this, of course, is an issue as we lose forests more, the remaining forests become more unstable.
Right. You get a lower quality of forest because they're being segmented, and then oftentimes for the logging industry, they'll plant a monoculture there, which that's not good for forest diversity and stability over a long period of time. Or you'll see it, they'll cut the forest down and they'll put a grazing pasture there, which it does return a certain amount of organic matter back into the soil. However, you don't have any trees there to use it, and so you're altering the ecosystem in that area.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of a negative impact of deforestation. The Amazon rainforest in Brazil get a lot of bad rap for this, but Canada is, I recently watched a TED talk by a professor who was studying the impacts of deforestation, and Canada is actually the leading deforesting nation right now, according to her. So
yeah, And it sounds like the Amazon is actually, they're starting to get better at lowering deforestation in the Amazon. Brazil has some plan to actually get to zero deforestation sometime in the near future. Can't remember what year they were claiming, but it was pretty soon, and they're on track. But yeah, Canada's currently got higher deforestation.
You see a lot of monocultures up in Canada, a lot of those issues because the pine industry is big up there.
Pine and hemlock. And,
right.
Yeah.
You see a lot of monocultures, a lot of that square sectioning, leaving thin strips of forest in between these monocultures, and still a little bit different because I think Brazil you see a lot more pastures and stuff, grazing lands being opened up.
Yep.
So it's two different farmland. It's two different means of deforestation, but the impacts are just as negative for both.
Right, absolutely. And you know, while we're talking about the Amazon, kind of, let's just talk about how important these gigantic forests are in general. You know, the Amazon's not even the biggest forest in the world, is it?
No, it is not. So, the taiga forest is often kind of forgotten. It makes up a third of our forest in terms of size. It is one third of all the forests on our planet. It spans across the northern top of the globe through Russia, Canada, Alaska, and it is an unbroken ring around the Arctic Circle. And just kind of think for a minute how cool that is. You have this Arctic Circle in the middle where it's just snow and ice, where plants actually cannot grow. Life is just non-existent. And then out from there, you see all of a sudden these evergreen shrubs and trees that can live in this incredibly harsh climate. And from there, the taiga moves out just on so many miles. I don't even know how big it is.
It's amazing how just right at that line, suddenly plants can grow, and there's a huge, dense forest of extremely slow-growing trees.
Right.
And these trees grow at a rate of only a couple centimeters per year, because the growing season is only, I don't know how...
It's so short. It's only a month.
Yeah, something like that.
For most of the northern part of the taiga, but then eventually it spreads down and just, you know, we all used to be one big forest coming off of the equator, but it's been segmented now, and so it is just interesting to think about, because I'm looking at a paper here too, and they're citing a couple studies done that showed transpiration rates, which that's what really drives those cycles and whatnot and moves water from the soil to the atmosphere. They don't differ very much between these conifer forests and the broadleaf deciduous forests and evergreen forests. It's all pretty much
it's
relatively equal.
It's kind of counterintuitive. One would think that the really lush tropical forests would be the highest transpiration, therefore moving the most water into the atmosphere, but it's interesting to know that the taiga even can get just as much water into the atmosphere
and now,
move the cycle along also.
That's not saying that that's necessarily happening at like the northern front of the taiga, but when you take the taiga as a whole, that's what you see. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how we as humans manage that resource in the coming years here. I think polar exploration is something that's going to drastically increase as we start to use up resources towards the southern part of the climate. I mean, you think about where all the most of the water is held in glaciers right now for fresh water, and most of the world's forest and timber industry is in the taiga. So it'll be a resource that hopefully we use better than what we're currently using our resources, but
hopefully
one can only hope for that unless you're in a position of power to do something.
Yeah, I hope we've learned our lesson.
But undoubtedly we digress.
Yeah. So, shall we talk about the biodiversity of forests and why forests are so important for biodiversity?
Absolutely. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, well, I'm looking at a website here from the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations that claims that forests are among the most important repositories of terrestrial biological diversity, which means that they consider in the entire world that forests are extremely important for housing the biodiversity that we have in the world. We need to have these species in case we need them ever, and in case to protect them from going extinct like so many species already have.
It's really interesting. In grade school and high school even, they don't necessarily talk about how many species have already gone extinct. You hit the big ones like mammoths and things like that. But
dodo birds.
Yeah, when you realize that when North America was first settled by Europeans, we had over three different kinds of sloth and a buffalo population of around probably, I think they said 10 million at one point. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that that doesn't get covered quite as much in our history, and I think I know why. It's because humans just exploited the hell out of them, and they don't want to talk about it. But it's when you destroy a resource, you're not just getting rid of those major ones, but you're also impacting a lot of smaller, different things, like microorganisms, insects, birds, things that we don't normally consider really important. Yeah. But when you come to see how they all function within an ecosystem and how one will drive the other and one will be a food source for the other, and it all kind of works in a harmony kind of way.
Yeah.
Most of the time, that when you clear cut something or we have deforestation, that really has an impact on the biodiversity as a whole, and you can't get that back once it's gone.
Yeah, it's interesting to know that a lot of trees rely on certain species of insects to pollinate them, and if that species disappears from any particular ecosystem, that population of trees is in trouble. It can't reproduce anymore. And likewise, if that population of trees disappears, which that insect was relying on, now that insect population will also decline as well. And that's just one example of how taking out one species can drastically affect the others. And, you know, it's a big cycle, a big web, where, you know, any one that affects another one is also going to affect at least a dozen more.
Right. Yeah, so if you look up biodiversity in forests, you're going to find a lot of really, really cool stuff. Last 100 or so years here, we've really started to understand the importance of this. And the benefits of, you know, even something as simple as a fungus that they have on plants and trees and the way everything interacts, it's really pretty cool. I encourage you to go look at that.
Yeah, it's all about interaction between the different species in nature. It's very cool. So, I think with that, it's time to move on to our species
highlight of the week, the sugar maple, Acer saccharum. So, maple, super common tree, hardy to zone 3 to 8.
Yep.
We're going to talk about the sugar maple this week, which is especially important because it is not only a shade tree, it's an ornamental tree, and honestly, you know what? I'm gonna classify it as a food tree too, because you can get maple syrup from that.
Absolutely.
I love fresh maple syrup, so we're gonna classify it as a food also. So let's describe this tree for him, Mr. Sherwood.
Yeah, let's start off with some identification characteristics. So the leaves are opposite on the branch, right across from each other, and the leaves have three major lobes and two like sublobes or minor lobes below that. And the lobes are in the shape of your hand, so if you had three fingers, each finger could be a lobe. So they have these seeds which look like what most people call helicopters. When you see them falling out of the tree, they spin.
They make a mess.
They do make a mess. The technical term for those are called samaras. But the point is that sugar maples have especially fat seeds in the helicopters, which is distinct from a lot of the other maple species, and so you know, even once the leaves fall off, if there's some samaras or helicopters laying around, you can still pick those up and see whether or not the tree is a sugar maple or a different kind of maple.
Right, it's pretty tricky. If we talk about what the leaves look like, it's got three primary lobes. They're really big and distinguished. They kind of look like a crown in some cases.
Yeah, kind of.
And then they have two sublobes below those. They're really little lobes. You might not even really see them unless you really pick up a leaf and look at the shape of it.
Yep. The leaves are bright orangish red in the fall.
They go through a variety of different colors. It's really cool.
Amazing fall color.
You should, as long as you're on Google, you should look up the color of a maple tree in the fall. It's really cool.
You know, if you're anywhere that maple trees are grown, really keep your eye out for sugar maples specifically come fall.
So this is going to be, for those of you looking to maybe put this in your yard, it's going to grow to a height of 60 to 75 feet, and it'll have a spread about 40 to 50 feet at maturity. And with this one, it's really important to plant it far away from your house. It's also really important to watch and not get a double leaders or really, like I said, maples are really aggressive branching. You really gotta be on top of your pruning game when you plant these, or they're just gonna turn into a mess. Because they're a really great tree and they'll grow for a really long time, but they don't have the strongest of wood. So it's really important to get that structure
the
right.
The thing is, the wood's really hard, which makes it brittle also. Mm-hmm. And so any tight joints will snap very easily, even though the wood's really hard. And so, yeah, I mean, they just need a lot of space where they can spread out, sprawl.
They like full sun.
Yeah, they like full sun. They like a big open space. They like slightly acidic soil. They like moist soil.
They can tolerate slightly alkaline soil, but try to avoid it if you can.
Yeah, not ideal for them. But, yeah, it's a tree that's native to really all of Northeast North America, pretty much the entire corner of the continent, coming all the way down.
And tying it into forests here, too, sugar maples, they commonly get eaten by deer, moose, squirrels. They'll feed on the seeds, those little helicopters we were talking about. So they're really important for the ecosystem here up in the Northeast and Northwest.
Yeah. They're a great, great food source for everything. Kind of going back to last episode, are the food sources. Yeah, mm-hmm. These are a great food source. So, yeah, speaking of food source, maple sugar, maple syrup.
Yep.
You know, that's a really big thing in Wisconsin where we are here, and also I know Canada is a big industry up there.
Maple syrup.
One of our good friends has a maple sugar farm. They produce maple syrup in Wisconsin. They got really great maple syrup, I gotta say. I get a gallon of it every year.
Yeah. Kamenik Farms, go check them out.
Yeah, I definitely will recommend Kamenik Farms. But anyways, we're not here to make advertising.
It's just a really cool tree because it you can know that it's used for an actual purpose, for food, and then it looks so great. It is really hard to beat a fall color for a maple, if not impossible. Mm-hmm. It is honestly just really vibrant and bright and distinguished. And like I said, it could be a great centerpiece for your yard. I have a maple in my parents' yard that they just planted. I'm gonna prune that thing to be the greatest looking maple you've ever seen. It's gonna be just gorgeous.
Yeah, they'll get a really nice upright, oval, rounded crown on them. Kind of that like perfect tree, yard tree look. Great tree.
She's great.
Yeah. I think that's all we have to say about sugar maple then. So that wraps up this episode. If you guys got any questions or comments, definitely let us know. Leave us a comment and we'll try and address that in a future episode here.
Thanks for listening, guys.